Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, guys. Another special day in the studio today.
We have Maureen Callahan.
Yes.
Who is...
such a solid name.
I like that name. Welcome to the show,
thank
by the
you.
Way.
It's a good name, man. Yeah. I'm all about that.
No one ever can guess my ethnicity.
Oh.
My origin.
That's a good thing sometimes,
no,
right?
I'm joking. It's
okay.
Like one of the most Irish
I was
going to
be like,
names you could come
oh,
up
I see
with.
What you're
aren't
saying.
You
yes.
Irish?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
like,
pretty Irish.
Yeah, pretty Irish. Pretty Irish. Well, thank you for being here. We really, really appreciate it. We're going to dive.
Thank you for having me.
Very
I'm so
much
thrilled.
Into Israel Keys.
So, Maureen, you wrote the book American Predator, The Hunt for the Most Meticulous Serial Killer of the 21st Century.
Wait, can I give some accolades before we
yes,
even go
please.
Into it? New York Times bestseller.
Woo!
Washington Post 10 books to read in July. Los Angeles Times 7 highly anticipated books for summer reading. USA Today 20 of the season's hottest new books. And New York Post named it 25 best beach reads of 2019.
So this isn't like...
Mazel tov.
Thank you.
This isn't like someone independently
this
made
isn't
a
my
book.
Journals from when
right.
I was six. Like
this is the
asking
real...
if my brother had leprosy.
Yeah,
this
exactly.
is real shit right here, people.
Exactly. And I will say, not to keep going on about it, although I'm sure Maureen is loving it.
Yes.
I will say that she had sent some copies of the book over to us here
yes.
at Oxygen, and a couple people in the Oxygen digital team are reading it.
Gasped.
Had a meeting yesterday, and they're like, guys, no, like, it's really, really good. And so if you guys are listening and you have an interest in the Israel Keys topic, you
yes.
you must get this book. So, Maureen, thank you for taking the time to join us.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much
these.
For having me.
Yes.
I could talk about this case all day long. And after 5 years of being stuck in a room by
yeah.
myself with
yeah.
all these documents and interviews and just
yeah.
the creep factor through the roof, it's very
liberating, probably. Yeah.
And weirdly fun to get to talk to people who now share my obsession.
What was
you
that
don't
like?
Seem like the only creep in the room
right.
anymore, right? We're creeps all here.
Yes, this might as well be creeps and martinis.
Where
honestly.
Did you first hear about
yeah.
the case? Where did you first hear about him? And why were you so kind of fascinated?
Yeah, I came across this small article. It was on Slate in early December 2012. And I got to the second paragraph and... it sounds like a cliche, but my jaw started dropping. It was a modus operandi that the FBI said they had never encountered before. It was a kind of serial killer that the FBI's top criminal minds openly admitted they could not understand.
Right.
Or profile.
He didn't
or
have a certain profile right.
because there had never been one like him before.
Terrifying.
And then the last line of the paragraph said the FBI, the federal government, had been keeping his existence mm-hmm. a secret for 9 months until right now when they decided to ask the public for help in solving an unknown string of murders he had committed across the United States for the past 14 years, which sounded pretty weird to me.
Yeah.
So I thought there are going to be multiple mysteries to dig into with this case. It's going to be much bigger than just a true crime serial
right.
killer case. And,
right.
and it in fact did turn out to be that in ways that I never could have anticipated.
Yeah, I mean, just his travel schedule with the murders and how everything was sort of like meticulously planned. But each place, like most of the cases that we cover, it's always like within an area, within a state, or within a community. This is like anywhere is fair game for this guy, it almost seemed like.
And this is what made him so terrifying. He, like you just said, you know, there's no geographical region that he's keeping to, like most serial killers do. And he has no victim profile like most serial killers do. Right. He will take anyone. And whether you're alone or not, which is even more terrifying. I think we like to think of ourselves as safer in numbers, not with this guy.
Right.
He had buried kill kits all over the United States.
Yeah.
An untold number of which are still out there. Home Depot buckets, 5 gallons, filled with guns, ammo, zip ties, ropes, cash from bank robberies he's previously committed, and Drano to accelerate human decomposition.
Oh my God.
He is buying a one-way plane ticket from Anchorage, Alaska, where he lives with his girlfriend and 10-year-old daughter. He is taking his cell phone and turning it off, ripping out the battery. Now using only cash, he has gone dark. He's flying into a major hub. He is renting a car. He's driving hundreds of or thousands of miles to dig up one of these kits. And then he goes on the hunt. And he will take people in broad daylight. He will take them in the dead of night from public places, from their own bedrooms. He will move them. He will rape, torture, and kill them. He will then take the bodies and move them again, preferably across state lines, dispose of the remains so expertly that there is no trace of DNA, and then he gets back in that car and puts hundreds or thousands of miles between himself and those victims. And this is how he was able to operate.
It's almost like you just need the time to do it, and he could do it. He's also a young guy. I mean, he died, killed himself when he was like 34, I believe, right? So, I mean, this all happened in the height of his probably physical prowess.
Physical prime.
Yeah.
He had served in the United States Army, which is another mystery.
It's fucking crazy.
As to how he even got in. And if you want, I can talk to you about that for sure. But he was described as a super soldier by his commanding officer, by the members of his platoon. He had Army Ranger training. He had Special Forces training. He was an ultra marathoner. He was a sniper.
God. I didn't know he's all this.
He's like a trained killer.
He
like
was
just lethal.
Like a trained
like a
killer.
Professional like
murderer.
Yeah, murderer. Mm-hmm. As you were describing all those things, I kind of like found myself a little bit in a trance of like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I just kept kind of thinking it.
So many layers to the case.
Yeah, there's so many things. You know, we talk a little bit about his upbringing and how his family was an off the grid, very strictly religious type of family. And you've mentioned this in the book as well. And I think there's even something about them aligning with like white supremacy and things like that. Do you think that type of upbringing led to who he became, or was it just coincidence?
I definitely think it was a contributing factor, as do all of the agents who worked this case. One of the things I found so mysterious going into the reporting was why the FBI had told us nothing about his upbringing. Why was it such a blank slate?
Yeah, because I hadn't heard that before your book, actually.
And when I was reporting it, I was scratching and clawing. I wanted any scrap of information I could get about it, and there was almost nothing out there.
Where did you find it when you did?
How did you?
I convinced his mother to talk to me.
Oh.
Which I was...
That's a feat.
Thrilled
that
when
is
she
huge,
agreed, because she has never spoken about this case ever.
Yeah.
Another was I wound up having to sue the federal prosecutor in this case. It took me several years. It took me $30,000 of my own money.
Oh my God.
But I was so I just couldn't stop.
Yeah.
I had to know what were they hiding. And among the things that they were hiding were 13 hours of interrogations with Israel Keyes. And the psychological evaluation of Israel Keyes, which had never been made public, the initial confession to his last known victim, and I say known pointedly, because
we know there's
another.
Yeah.
It's in the book. But that confession had always been kept hidden from public view, and I obtained it from a source who wishes to remain anonymous. But all of these things were such again, why all the secrecy with a case that within the FBI, the agents who worked it told me will never be considered closed, but officially is considered closed. Mm. So this case is closed. The suspect is dead. What is the problem?
Do you think it's like a blemish on their record because they didn't have a profile, because they didn't really know how to solve it, that they kind of wanted to keep it from the public to make them not seem, I don't want to say weak, but maybe not as successful in catching these serial killers as we all thought that maybe they were?
I think there's a couple, and you're on to something, Darren, for sure.
Okay. I do a true crime podcast. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we've been down this road.
A highly
critical,
sophisticated interrogative mind.
Yes.
One of the reasons I when I got the Samantha confession, it became very clear to me why they were hiding it. And it wasn't the graphic nature of the confession, which, you know, you can easily redact those details.
Right.
It was that the federal prosecutor in the 11th hour came in and bigfooted the FBI and said, I'm running this investigation now.
Yeah.
And this went on for months. When they caught Keys, they had almost nothing connecting him to Samantha's abduction and disappearance. So if he stuck to his original story, which was crazy and nobody believed, but he could stick to it and he would walk. And this guy nearly blew it. And so that's one reason. Another reason, I believe, is that there is so much secrecy over this case still, and one of the documents, or several of the documents I got late in the game, really flipped a switch in my mind. At some point, this investigation was reclassified from serial murder to terrorism.
Mm. Wow. What was that line that gets you going from serial killer to terrorism? Like,
the
amount of killing, or is it the amount of, like, not knowing? Or
serial murder is not the same as terrorism.
Because he had roots in, like, anti-government rebellion.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right. Right.
And so to your earlier question about his childhood,
and religion,
what's salient about that? So his parents join, his parents, by the way, who raised these kids, 10 children. He's the second of 10.
Oh my God, I didn't know it was 10.
And the oldest boy. They raised them up in remote Colville, Washington on purpose so that nobody will see what's happening to these kids. They spend the first 7 years up there living in tents throughout every single season.
Mm.
Winter, summer, rain, natural disasters, because their father is busy building them a cabin by hand. Meanwhile, Israel is learning how to hunt and shoot game so he can feed his family.
Oh my God.
His parents, around the time he's 14 and he's really burgeoning as a budding psychopath,
mm-hmm.
join the ARC, which is this white supremacist church, John,
right.
as you said.
Mm-hmm.
And it's there that a young Israel Keys befriends two brothers named Chevy and Shane Kehoe.
Mm.
The Kehoe brothers grow up to become among the FBI's 10 most wanted.
Oh, good friends to have.
And connected to the Oklahoma City bombing?
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yes. When they are finally apprehended, one of the brothers flips on the other and names him as a co-conspirator with Timothy McVeigh in the Oklahoma City bombing. When Israel Keyes is arrested in Texas, it takes 2 weeks to extradite him to Anchorage, Alaska. And another little nugget I was able to obtain was the FBI's secret internal timeline of his travels, which has never been published before.
Oh, my God.
The very last entry, never made public. The U.S. Marshals make a pit stop with Israel Keys on the way back to Anchorage. And where do they stop? Oklahoma City.
No.
What?
Oh, my God.
That's crazy.
And you just unearthed this, like, piece of information that's just, like, sitting there this whole time.
Well, everyone, I feel like, knows the Oklahoma City. Like, everyone knows that. They know Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah.
They know the Unabomber. But, like, a lot of people don't actually know about Israel Keyes. Like, if I said that name to 100 people on the street, I'm not sure anyone would be like, ding. Like, why?
And, yeah.
He's
exactly.
just, like, why are people not
why
paying attention
nobody,
to this?
Not only why... Not just because it's a fascinating case, but if
totally.
You really think about it, there are so many cold cases that can be linked to him and I believe solved, and I explore several of those in the book.
Right.
You know, but if this case went from serial murder to terrorism, if this is a guy who, think about it, post 9/11 is buying a ton of one-way plane tickets.
Right.
If that doesn't flag you.
I got to take my fucking shoes off, but he's he's doing one-way plane tickets.
Exactly. Like, what does? Yeah. If also he's boarding these planes with his carry-ons filled with guns and rifles broken apart, and
right.
he's not once stopped.
Yeah, but did he take his liquids out?
That's right.
If you took the liquids out, then you're okay, and you know that.
And if you don't, you're a red flag in the system.
I also want to talk to you about the psychology of being this, you know, mass murderer, this psychopath, but having a daughter and having a family and raising her. Like, what in his mind did you find? How do we reconcile that? There seems to be a lot of cognitive dissonance with that.
Yep. That was something I asked every single agent who worked this case.
Yeah.
Did they believe he loved her? Because they
regarded... And, like, want to protect her.
They regarded everyone else in his life as pretty much a useful tool.
Right.
Like the girlfriend, for example, gives an outward...
Appearance.
Manifestation of normalcy.
Exactly.
And responsibility. And, you know, he can be an adult. And he's got this 10-year-old daughter who they all said... It shocked me, but they all said they truly thought he really did love her. He really loved her. I mean, when he wasn't with her, he would make her call him every hour on the hour. And then this is a guy whose last known victim is an 18-year-old girl.
Oh my
How
God.
Do you reconcile that?
Yeah.
There's so many things like that, though, right? Like, I mean, even just in religion, you know, you hate gay people or whatever, and then you find out those guys are actually gay. You know, it's like so much, it's like such internal cognitive dissonance and so much shame. But there could be a part of him that was sort of like, this is completely separate from my life here. And didn't, you know, as a psychopath, I'm assuming that he doesn't have like a good sense of self. Like he might not have thought that that was him. You know what I mean? Like, we'll never know because he killed himself. But like, did you find that in all of your research and everyone you talked to and all the hours that you put in that you could see him loving his daughter?
Yeah. And partly because... that kind of love is in some ways an extension of one's own narcissism.
Right.
Right.
She's literally part
him.
Of him.
Yeah.
It's his blood,
right.
by the way.
Exactly.
Which is typical with white supremacy.
Do you know what's interesting? Her mother is black.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
For being mm-hmm. part of like the arc.
Yeah.
Or I mean, maybe not by choice because it's more his parents
true.
That brought it in. I don't know if he like wanted to be a part of it, but
he
still.
Did. He did at a certain point.
Oh, okay. So he kind of got converted into that.
Yeah.
Life.
Yeah, and he talked to the investigators about almost killing a cop in Anchorage and that he had always had that fantasy and that he thought it was located in his white supremacist roots.
Oh my God.
There's a note here that says like a weird thing about Keyes is that he made trips to Mexico for what seemed like plastic surgeries. Why? Did you talk to any of the doctors? What was going on there?
So this is another detail that I uncovered. You know, I get these, what they call rolling disclosures from the Department of Justice.
Yeah.
Every few months, allegedly. They've curiously stopped coming since the publication of this book.
Oh, I wonder why.
Interesting.
That's weird. it doesn't take an investigative journalist to figure that one
or
out.
Or a podcaster,
or
for that
Or a podcast
matter.
Host, right.
But these were documents that I got towards you know my deadline approaching for the book, and it was this secret internal timeline, and there were notations made by Keyes about elective surgeries that he was having in Tijuana, in Mexico. Now I've heard the theory that these were elective surgeries that his girlfriend was having. I would like to say I do not believe that is remotely possible. His girlfriend was a highly educated, well-compensated travel nurse who, at the time of his arrest, was working in the hospital in Anchorage. If she's getting surgery, it's in the United States.
Yeah.
Hell
it's
yeah.
First
yeah.
class.
Yeah.
She's not hot-footing it to Tijuana.
No
to
way.
A shack
no.
To have someone carve her open. So,
not with a 10-year-old either.
No.
No, no.
Not the 10-year-old. And by the way, any member of his family, they all... never saw a doctor. They did not believe in the medical establishment.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's
yeah.
Keyes. And so why? Why is Keyes, who was all of these things I enumerated, super soldier, mm-hmm. ultra marathoner, rangy athletic guy his whole life, going for gastric bypass surgery off the grid in Mexico? And then I thought, if you're an apex predator, which he is, and all you want to do in life is hunt and kill human prey, why be distracted by crass, crude biological urges such as hunger.
I was just going to say that.
Why not circumvent that biological necessity?
And just like make his stomach so small that he eats like one peanut and he's fine.
Yep.
Holy shit. I didn't even put it that way. I thought like, oh, he's changing his appearance, you know, to just even further
elude.
I think
there was some of that going on too, for sure. I mean, if you look, there aren't that many photos of him, but even the FBI agents, when they were conducting their witness interviews, were like careful to ask, like, did you notice any changes in his appearance?
Right.
He had been described early on when he was in the army as having this enormous nose, like just gigantic. And if you look at later pictures, that seems to have been somehow refined.
Right.
He had such poor nutrition growing up. I can't imagine he didn't have teeth work done. You know, you can alter your fingerprints surgically.
I was thinking that too, yeah.
Botox to inhibit perspiration. He said the only DNA he ever really worried about leaving behind was sweat DNA. So there's a lot you could do, and I think he was so diabolical and he was so interested in turning himself into something like the FBI and the world had never seen.
A machine.
Biohacking would be like totally up his alley.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking like it was either Edison or Einstein who used to wear, I mean, I wear black every day, but like they wore the same thing every day because they didn't want to have to bother with thinking about like what to put on because they were using their mind in so many other ways. Mm-hmm. This is taking that concept into a completely different fucking crazy realm where it's like, I want to kill so much that I don't even have time to eat.
Yeah.
Like, holy crap. I never even thought about that.
Yeah.
So, and it's so weird too, because so he spends this time potentially becoming this apex predator, as you put it, which is a great way to explain him, by the way. But then, so he gets convicted and sentenced, and he asked to be executed as quickly as possible. And I found that so interesting because people like Ted Bundy, who, you know, in exchange for cooperation, asked for, you know, an extension with his execution. But what do you think was the psyche with Keyes? And then why do you think it's so different between like him and other serial killers who want to extend their lives, I guess?
I think that he quickly, at first he didn't want the death penalty. And that changed within like a day or two of his first sit down with the FBI in Anchorage. And it happened, he said, and they believed him, and I believe this too, that he realized he was going to wind up spending the rest of his life in a federal supermax. Psychopaths have a very low threshold for boredom.
Right.
And in fact, one of the things that I thought was unique to Keyes, but I later learned from talking to Roy Hazelwood, who was one of the top profilers of the FBI, is actually quite textbook among them, is compulsive driving. And he says it's because
That makes sense.
They need to have a constant change of scenery because they are so easily bored. And for Keyes, the idea of being in prison the rest of his life was unimaginable.
He
also did not, he was like, I know how this works. I know you guys are going to come back to me every anniversary. You're going to try to get me to talk about more cases.
Yeah.
I don't want to be that guy. And I want this done. I want this over with. Just kill me now.
Right. Well, I mean, that tracks with him being able to drive thousands of miles in between. I mean, for me, I'm like, oh my God, if it's more than a 3-hour car ride, like
most of us get tired and sleepy. Oh,
we're
bored.
It's boring. This
exactly.
isn't boring for those people.
Exactly.
That is absolutely wild that he just changed it. Like the first time meeting with the FBI, he was like, okay, now I want the death penalty.
Well, he also realized, and again, this is part of, I think, some of the secrecy, he had a great court appointed defense attorney. And this guy is among the staunchest anti-death penalty advocates in the nation. So Keyes wanted it and his lawyer did not.
Oh my God.
So they were trying to delay this case and delay this. And meanwhile, Keyes is saying to the FBI, I know, again, Timothy McVeigh got executed super fast. So you can do the same for me. You can do the same for me, and you need to get these lawyers off of my ass.
Right.
And if you want more victims, I'll give them to you. You will have them. Just
do this
deal.
For me.
Yeah,
get
me
this deal.
Wow. It's just weird. I had not really ever heard of that before.
The details that you dug up. We need to read your book.
The story just gets wilder and wilder. And, you know, like I say, if this had been a fictional story, I would have had to remove at least three aspects of this narrative because no one would believe it. It would seem like just too much.
It's true. What is one thing from this book that we didn't touch on today? Or maybe what was the most revelatory thing that you unearthed, because it sounds like you've got a lot of interesting details here that we were just talking about. What's something we haven't touched on that you can tease for those of you guys listening to go buy the book?
I would say the most interesting thing that I hope the book accomplishes is having a long tail with readers who explore the cold cases that I explore in the book. These are really carefully considered choices I made because they're cases that law enforcement has looked at keys for, that the FBI has suspiciously and very quickly eliminated keys for when Steve Payne, the lead agent on this case, told me he doesn't count keys out for anything, including the untimely death of Keyes' own father. And Payne told me that was based on nothing more than his gut. And I think that there are definite answers to be had, not just in, is Keyes the likely murderer in certain cold cases or abductions, but I'm also hoping that there's enough pressure put on the FBI that we learn exactly what's behind those terrorism charges.
Yeah.
And what's behind his suicide, which has been covered up as well. Covered up to such an extent that there's almost zero record of what went on that night, except for a source telling me that you could see blood pooling out of his cell, which I visited.
That's how he claimed to have died, from the blood.
The blood is pooling out of his cell over the course of hours, and guards are walking by and nobody's doing a thing, and it's ruled, you know, suspicious circumstance, but he killed himself. It was going to happen. No.
Wow.
Again, guys, for all of you out there, it's American Predator, The Hunt for the Most Meticulous Serial Killer of the 21st Century, which I think says it all.
Yes.
Maureen, thank you.
Thank you for coming on to the show.
Can you come back and just talk to us for like, can you just read the fucking book to us? Like, audiobook this
shit? That's a really good idea.
Yes.
We should do that.
You can get it on audio if you prefer to, you know, have
everyone
a little
needs audiobook to read it.
Yeah.
A bedtime story.
Thank you for the time that you spent, though, like, just like illuminating the audience with everything. I mean, we always say in the show, like, best disinfectant is sunlight. And even if it just helps one person kind of understand the profile of somebody that doesn't have a normal profile, you've done your job 100 times over. So thank you so much.
Oh my God. Coming from you guys, that's quite a compliment.
Oh, thank you so much.
Sorry, we didn't have any more teenies today, but next time we will make sure to
For the next book launch, I feel like you can, like, you know, do a whole other book about this story.
It is my cocktail of choice. So,
Good.
All right. Well, American Predator is available wherever books are sold. Maureen, thank you so much.
Thank you for coming
in. Thank you guys for having me. Bye.
Hi, everyone.
Hey, guys.
Here we are again, episode 99.
We're so close.
It kind of snuck up on me. Episode 100 next week.
Isn't it sneaked?
I think it's sneaked. That's why I said that. But
snuck
then I was like, snuck
is like, I think that's...
I have an English degree. I don't know the answer.
I mean, you really should know this. This is embarrassing for you, John.
I think past tense is sneaked. Snuck up on me. All right. Anyways.
I don't know. It's like hung or hanged. I never know.
It's not adjectives in murder. It's martinis.
It's a murder. Yes. Okay. Well, we're never going to get that right.
But I can't believe 100 episodes next week. But I was thinking, as we were, you know, we plan a lot of these episodes out so far in advance, but I hadn't thought of anything like special to do.
No.
I know we have something planned for the end of the year that Megan's working on.
Well, I mean...
we should have Taco Bell.
I was waiting for that dinner to come around.
Right.
We still have our $25 from the fan that gave
we
it to
do.
Us at
it's
Crime Con.
Desk.
I can't believe we haven't spent it in 5 months. It's weird because, like, we mark things based on episodes. So it's like, all right, yeah, we're almost at our 100th episode.
Yeah.
But it's like when you try and get out of the mentality of a school year being the year, where you're like, oh, it's the end of the year. And it's like May. And now I'm like, okay, I'm back on like the regular year.
Human adult year.
And so I'm thinking, like, we could celebrate the end of our 2-year anniversary as opposed to like 100. Like, it's hard to keep it all in flux, but I'm very happy that we've almost reached 3 digits.
I love what you just said about the school year.
Because you know that's... Well, I always used to fight with my mom. I'd be like, it's the end of the year. My mom's like, it's April.
Well, it's like, and also, you know, summer's, you know, watch out, it's time for summer. But meanwhile, it's like May 23rd, and it's like summer's still a month away.
Right.
We could do a whole another shot about like school mentality and how it has affected us as adults. You know what I mean? But that's not interesting, and that's not the show. Anyway, next week is 100 episodes. Maybe we'll work on something. I had just mentioned something about Megan working on something at the end of the year. She had no clue what I was talking about, I could tell.
That sounds very typical.
And that's because I haven't told Megan what she will be working on
at
the end
of the year.
That
also sounds very typical.
Yeah, so Megan, stay tuned for that.
Okay.
She's laughing in the background.
She's like, what am I doing? I know. I hate it when like Andy will tease something. He's like, I have a really big annoying task for you.
Yeah.
I'll tell you later.
Tell
and
you
I'm
later.
Like, ugh. Or now I'm dreading it.
Do you ever get the text from like your girlfriend or boyfriend if you're me? And it's like, hey, I have to tell you something or I have to talk to you about
something.
Yeah, like
something. Let's talk later.
Or
like,
let's talk
I
later.
Know.
Like,
I don't want to talk later. I want to talk now.
You've now set in motion lots of panic and we need to talk now.
I've had that conversation before with 8 a.m. where I'm like, you can't do that to me. Like if you want to talk, then it has to be. Because even if it's good or bad, like the idea of it bouncing back and forth, like when your neurons are really firing, like I don't want that stress.
You just mentioned 8 a.m. or I don't know. Have we said who that is on this show?
Oh, yeah.
You do say her name.
I switch back and forth.
Yeah.
I just sometimes 8 a.m. just sounds really
do
good.
Do the fans know what we.
Yeah, I think we've talked about it early on. But our first date or second date, she came to come pick me up in a car at 8 a.m. because we've never done that before.
That's a fun fact for when you're in the audience of one of our live shows and we do martinis and murder trivia.
Point her out.
Well, okay, let's get to our drinks because I'm thirsty.
Oh, Matt, look at you, you
by the
little
way,
lush.
I turned the lights on this week. Usually our studio is a cave.
I feel good about it, though, because I don't
do
feel
too.
As tired.
I was just going to say, I was just telling Megan before we started, I did not sleep well last night, and I'm so tired. I just drank as much coffee as I can, turned the lights on so I wouldn't be like sleepy and weird. Anyway, Matt, what
are
we
you
drinking?
Wearing a jacket or is it a button-down?
It's a button-down.
Okay, I like it as a jacket, so.
Did you just unbutton it, though? Because I feel like
I
it was just.
I'm feeling
a little white tee underneath.
Oh, he's taking his
ooh, baby Church just kicked. Ooh, oh, whoa.
When she heard the news.
Well, we don't know the gender.
When it, that's right. We are
we
not
don't
assigning
know. It's
gender.
It's still too early to tell.
And it's 2018.
I will say that they have a little red nose because I saw it on the sonogram.
You did. Yes.
And cute little antlers already.
It was glowing in the sonogram, wasn't
definitely.
It?
Definitely. It was an orb.
Yeah.
You know, and I could, so the gender was obfuscated because it was so bright.
Right, right.
But I just know that it's going to be a light in my life.
Well, let's see what happens.
You're going to be Uncle Johnny.
Let's see how long it takes before this thing
Aunt
is actually
Aunt Megan over
born.
Here. So I'm just saying.
Excuse me, I'm Aunt John. Okay, thank
oh, yeah.
you very much.
An Uncle Megan. Just make sure you
exactly.
guys get the right baby gifts.
Right.
Yeah.
Whatever they may be.
Like, not a 30th birthday gift, John. Like, this baby deserves to start the world with a good place.
I'll save for another shot, but I was feeling extremely guilty recently because
good.
I was like, did I even actually get her anything?
Nope.
I thought I did get you something, and that's why...
No one did. It's fine. It's cool, guys.
Everyone gives me shit on Facebook about it, so...
Signed, bitter, and miserable. Keep going.
You're definitely going to need a few drinks when it's time to give birth. With those antlers...
Right.
It's going to be a rough, though.
It's not going to be a comfortable... birth.
Nothing I haven't experienced before, let me tell you, if I could give you a synopsis of my dating life, but let's move on.
Tune into another shot for that.
I need another drink before we get to the antler birth. Matt, what are we drinking today?
We're drinking a Corpse Reviver.
That
this
seems...
is
we've had that
staff user,
yes.
again, of
yes.
course.
Of course.
The Corpse Reviver is a good Halloween-appropriate hangover cure.
Ooh. Great.
Okay.
And it is... simply 1 ounce of cognac frappin, 1 ounce of Laird's Applejack, and a half ounce of Antica Formula Sweet Vermouth.
Nice.
Or maybe it's Antica.
So he's not getting any vermouthy, right?
Correct.
John is not getting...
I'm getting a specific drink, right?
Oh.
Yes.
Oh,
John,
oh, like the special berry drink you got.
Right.
Lord.
Yes. I forgot about that.
So the subject of the podcast, which I'm not going to mention, was... obsessed, I guess, with the Insane Clown Posse.
We've covered that before, Insane Clown Posse things.
Yeah, other murderers have been interested in ICP.
Yes.
And apparently ICP is obsessed with the Detroit soft drink Faygo.
Yes.
Yes, they are. That is a thing.
But you can't get that here.
In New York City.
So Gina ran out and got John a strawberry Fanta.
Yes.
Because she was so sure that he would hate this drink.
Strawberry. Is Faygo strawberry?
Yeah, you can get it in all different flavors. Yeah.
And why strawberry? Is that, I'm sorry, I missed that. Why strawberry Fanta?
Probably just because she was
asking
me.
Does that match the flavor or did you like strawberry?
I don't know. I think she did ask me like what flavor. I think I did say strawberry, come to think of it.
Interesting.
Unless it has a connection that I'm unaware of, but yeah.
What's your favorite like artificial flavor of something?
It's so weird that we're drinking this because just like 2 weeks ago, I was walking through the Upper East Side. I was running some errands.
Oh, thanks for reaching out. That's really nice of you. We're such good friends.
By the way, the tram.
No 30th birthday gift. You never reach out to me.
You're so mean. I was walking.
Are you even going to be there for the fucking birth?
I was walking in the Upper East Side and I don't know what came over. Oh, yeah. I know what it was. I saw somebody drinking Orange Crush, like orange soda.
Yes.
And I just immediately clicked into having a craving of it. And I literally went to a Duane Reade, which for those who don't know is like a Walgreens here in New York.
Yeah.
And I bought one and I drank the whole bottle and I didn't regret it. So that's my life.
Ooh, that
taking
is,
a whiff.
I'm taking a little whiffy.
Ooh, it's potent. That does smell good. Yeah.
It's potent. Ooh, I'm awake now.
All right. Well, while Matt
wait,
works
but what's
on
your
those,
favorite artificial flavor?
Orange. I think orange
for
would be.
For everything.
Oh, for everything? Probably strawberry. Ooh. You know what I love? A lot of people don't know this because it's somewhat hard to find. Strawberry Orbitz gum is so delicious.
See, I'm not into like the strawberry. I'm like, I'm a cherry girl, but I'm not.
Cherry's good.
Or grape. I love watermelon as a fruit. Hate it as a flavoring.
Really?
Yes.
I think it might be opposite for me.
Interesting.
It's just sloppy. You know how I am about sloppy food. It's annoying.
Oh, wow. Well,
you know that, Darren. Of course. It's the one thing you know about me.
It's your one fun fact.
All right. Well, while Matt is working on that, let's get into the serial killer Israel Keyes.
Let's do it.
And this episode is also connected to one of our Oxygen shows called Method of a Serial Killer, which is premiering this weekend.
That seems wildly coincidental there, John.
That an Oxygen podcast would be highlighting these things.
Yes.
But, you know, I know we've been doing a lot of these lately, but they're so interesting. I think you and I have an inherent
definitely
interest in these subjects that just happen to be up here.
And the case this week, Israel Keyes, as you were saying, you know, I was reading through it and, you know, normally when we do something like an Ed Gein or we do an Ed Kemper or something like that, it's gross and we kind of say like, oh my God, this gave me that same feeling, not in a gross way, in just like a tragic way,
totally,
because I feel like it could have happened to me.
I know. Well, the fun part too about this is like, you can listen to the podcast, but then watch the show and still
and you should
get new information. Yeah.
Definitely.
So that's what I love about doing these shows. But anyway, let's get into Israel Keyes while Matt makes our drinks. I'm so excited for mine. I feel bad because Gina, I think, has noticed I haven't been finishing the drinks as much lately because they've been so strong. And we all know listening to the show, I'm such a lightweight.
I don't have a problem.
Yeah, you never do.
Well,
but for me, I'm
take committed
one
to
sip.
My craft.
She said to me in our one-on-one.
Oh yes, oh, this is good. Yes.
What's up with Johnny's wasting
no,
all
she
the fucking
didn't
alcohol?
Oh.
Is that what she said?
How expensive it is.
I hope she said that. She definitely
that's
didn't because she's so nice, and I know she would never say that, but
she maybe politely said
I'll
it
I'll give
that
her
way.
$20 to say that in the next one-on-one. Just like a full-blown meeting.
I never thought about the expensive part of this.
The concept
drinks
of you sitting in an office and getting like yelled at for not finishing alcohol is like beautiful.
What have I done?
Yeah,
how
exactly
did I get here? How did I
thank
get here?
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm going to start off now that we're 20 minutes in. Okay,
yeah,
so among serial killers, Israel Keyes is an enigma. When police picked him up in March 2012 for the murder of a teen barista. Thank you, Matt. Oh, this is just a straight up Fanta drink.
So I'm drinking alcohol and you're just drinking a
wait
straight
a minute
up Fanta.
No, I have an actual drink, right? No, she's just giving me Fanta. Oh.
Wow. She just gave you fucking strawberry.
I can give you some
Fanta.
Cognac, but it's vermouth and cognac.
Yeah, no, that's okay.
I am adding this to my Insta story right
this
now.
Is hilarious.
You with the Fanta, but keep going.
It's, as we mentioned last week, soda pop and murder.
It's soda pop and murder. I actually thought she came up with a separate drink that included Fanta.
John, this is it's already going to post.
She didn't want to spend that much money on you, John.
Right, this was 99 cents. I am blown away. Thanks, Gina.
I need one more pick of it. Okay, go ahead. We're 20 minutes
we're
in. We got to go.
I know. We got to go.
Cheers with the plastic.
I guess I will. I guess I will. Although it would be hilarious if we put it in the actual thing. Okay, we'll post this.
This is amazing.
On our social.
God, I love this.
Cheers,
bitches.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let I'm going to post this right now with look at his child's drink.
I know. Ask me how
go
this
ahead
is.
I'm going to taste your strawberry Fanta and see how it is. Does it hit all the nodes?
Oh, my God. All the nodes are there. I'm drunk off my ass already.
This is strong.
That's what I'm saying. The
although
corpse
I
survivor,
can't
I
taste
can't
the vermouth in it, so I feel like you'd be fine.
I think
do you
I'm
want
okay
a little baby
a
sip of
let me
mine
take a little baby tersh
take
burn
a,
of a
take
sip
a baby tersh of it. Megan, do you like it? It's nice and refreshing.
Ooh, it's very smooth.
It's really smooth.
Mm, like it's, that is good.
I taste more cold than I do.
Yeah, I was gonna say
alcohol, which is good.
That is a great way. Do you say you tasted more cold?
Cold. Like, I love the
way you
cold.
Explain that. That's a good way to explain it. Well, I'm gonna sip on my Fanta, but first let's get into this week's episode for the millionth time. Okay.
Yeah, let's do it. Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals?
Maybe it's spending too much time obsessing about true crime.
No, John, that can only be a healthy thing.
Well, then maybe it's Matt.
Yeah, his voice is probably giving people nightmares.
Well, dedicators, you can use BetterHelp online counseling.
Good point, John. Take a drink.
You can schedule video and phone sessions plus chat and text with your therapist.
And the licensed therapist specialized in depression, stress, relationships, LGBT matters, grief, and much, much more.
Best of all, it's a truly affordable option. Martinis and Murder listeners get 10% off your first month with a discount code Martinis.
So why not get started today? Go to betterhelp.com/martinis.
Simply fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs and get matched with a counselor you'll love. That's betterhelp.com/martinis. So when police picked him up in March 2012 for the murder of a teen barista in Anchorage, Alaska, he ended up confessing to multiple murders, and bank robberies, and he alluded to even more crimes. He ultimately claimed to have killed up to 11 victims, according to the FBI, between 2001 and 2012, but couldn't or wouldn't tell the authorities exactly when and where.
Frustrating.
I know. And some of the footage that you'll see from the episode, you see him kind of talking to some of the...
And being a little elusive.
Yeah.
We'll get to more of that later. Of why.
Well, but he told the FBI just enough for them to take him seriously. He was born in Utah on January 7th, 1978. Israel Keyes was the second youngest of 10 siblings, reported Jesus. The Los Angeles Times. I almost said Los Angeles.
Los Angeles.
His parents were Mormons who later became strict fundamentalist Christians.
Ooh, That sounds fun. Yeah.
Keyes and his siblings were homeschooled, and his parents moved the family around quite frequently. When Keyes was a toddler, the family moved to the woods in Colville, Washington. Keyes said they sometimes lived without electricity, and some of his siblings slept in a tent for years on end. Can you imagine that? When I was in college, I didn't have a bed frame. and now I look back and I'm like, why did I do that?
Okay, but like you can get through. Like I could have probably slept 4 years in a sleeping bag, like in a dorm room, in a tent. If I see like an ant in my apartment, I'm moving.
We know how you are with spiders.
Sleeping in the wild, sometimes just standing up. Well, I sleep in the wild.
But he's always wearing my Dickie basketball shorts.
Well, right.
That's a uniform in the woods.
But also, deer stand like that.
I know.
Outside. So.
I know. I'm actually really surprised none of us have gotten ticks from that.
From Matt?
Yeah, well, deer ticks. Lyme disease is a real thing.
Yeah, no, that's
he
true.
Comes into the office.
Yeah.
He comes into the office from prancing around in the woods.
Right, with Prancer,
you
no
have
less.
One-on-ones with him.
With
like
Prancer, no less.
He loves to prance
loves
with Prancer.
Prancer.
That's
I know
his favorite.
This is a long episode. Here's
I know.
A very, very quick story.
Here we
I'm
go.
Sorry. I had a tick once in my ass, okay?
Do we really need
okay,
to do
I was
this?
Gardening. Right, you know how I love the garden.
I've heard about people getting ticks in very weird places.
And,
well,
okay, I saw it. This is the first tick that I got. I got another one later. I saw it, and you know, it can only be in there for so long. I've never had a tick before, and Lyme disease is a very serious issue.
Yeah,
here.
It is.
So, I felt like I had to get it out. There's no way I was going to go get on the Metro North train for like an hour
with a tick in your ass.
A tick in my ass.
Oh my god!
It was in it, or it was like crawling on the outskirts of it.
Engorged.
Ugh.
Okay, can we not use even that's too much for me.
And
how did you know that this tick was engorged in your butt?
When it's engorged, you know. Okay.
Yeah. Oh. Okay.
So it just so happens.
Megan seems very confident about that too. So John, listen.
I'm just listening.
The only other person home, the kids that got on the school bus, was the nanny, the temporary nanny.
Right.
It was her first day.
Oh my god!
You better tipped her for digging out a fucking tick in your asshole.
And I was like, I am so I don't know what to do. But
yeah,
like,
yeah, no, that's like
out.
Kind of an emergency. Yeah.
So I had to take my pants down.
Okay, we're gonna have to edit this part out.
We're editing everything.
Yeah, that's understandable. Yeah, yeah,
all the way.
Right.
I revealed as little as possible.
Aren't you so happy that
say,
wasn't the night that we had the sleepover?
Well, wait. So you went to the doctor or did you not go? You were able to...
He felt fine.
Okay. I did end up going anyway.
Oh, okay.
And it was already out.
The question is did the nanny end up going to like a mental institution or quitting
did
after?
Did you pay for her therapy thereafter? I honestly never thought we would get to this point in this podcast.
Well, we got there.
I mean, we're not even through
and
the
first... And it wasn't even me. All I said was Lyme disease. That's all I said.
Look, I know Matt lives very far north in the woods. He's a deer.
Technically, he threw a lemon at you, but if it was a lime, you would have had Lyme disease from him. And I'm just putting all the things together right now, saying, okay, keep going.
All right, let's keep going. How do we pick up? I don't know. But here we go. Keith said that they sometimes live without electricity, which I just mentioned. Some of his siblings slept in a tent for years on end. While living in Colville, the family sometimes attended a Christian identity church, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center. According to the SPLC, Christian identity is based on an anti-Semitic and racist theology that became popular in the 80s with the racist right, which may
another
be
another fun group.
Yeah, which may be popular again, sadly.
Yes.
This day and age.
It sounds like his type of people would really love two gay, you know,
podcasters. And their reindeer mascot.
Yes. Yeah. What do you think? And I'm a Jew, so what do you... I have no hope.
You don't?
You might be able to fit in a little
maybe,
bit, John.
On these parameters, maybe.
That could be a fun little test episode.
I did go to Bible school when I was like six.
God.
And then immediately needed to leave.
Yeah.
Keith said that his family moved from attending, and by the way, nothing against it for anybody who goes there. It just wasn't for me. You're getting to know us.
Bible school, not Aryan, like, exactly. Not anti-Semites.
Right, nothing
yeah,
like
let's,
that.
Let's be clear.
Yeah. Keith said that the family moved from attending an Amish type of church to a more militant militia sort of church. What kind of a church is that? I don't know. In Colville, as a child, Keyes befriended future white supremacists Chevy and Shane?
Yeah.
Shane? Yeah. Kehoe,
I think.
Kehoe, got it. Who are both in prison for murder and attempted murder. So there you go. Keyes and the Kehoes were neighbors and all attended the Christian Identity Church. Of Chevy, the New York Times wrote that he is, quote, one of the most notorious white supremacists in the United States, having engaged in a kidnapping, 3 robberies, 3 murders, and 2 police shootouts, all in a quest to establish an Aryan republic for white people.
Which cool.
Sounds really cool.
You're really successful at that, dude.
The Times also called him a, quote, merciless terrorist, end quote.
Fair.
Shane was sentenced to 24 years, and Chevy got life in prison, according to the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. And the Southern Poverty Law Center wrote that Chevy and Shane Kehoe went to prison in connection with their Aryan People's Republic, a terrorist cell that sought to violently carve out an all-white nation within the United States, end quote. Why do people...
I can't even, yeah.
It's like, where do you go?
It's also amazing that they're all together.
Together, I know. It's
what
like...
What are the chances of these
it's
people
a perfect
being
story.
Neighbors?
But you know, in prisons and stuff, they have their own little factions of people and gangs and, you know... It's separated by race and religion. So maybe there's just like, these are like different. I mean, yes, all these people together, but like, yeah, that's what's weird. That's what's weird.
It's almost like a perfect storm in a sense. In later interviews, Keyes told the FBI he was obsessed with guns as a boy and hunted, quote, anything with a heartbeat. Very disturbing.
So emotionally nice.
He also recalled. I wasn't sure where you were going with that.
How many reindeer he shot.
Oh, I'm sure plenty, Matt.
Not enough,
so
Matt. Let me
careful.
Tell you.
He also recalled going into the woods with his friends, tying the family cat to a tree.
I don't want to talk about it.
And shooting it in the stomach.
Thank you for not giving me that detail to say, because when I read it, I was like, I'm not going to read this.
Well, don't. I'm glad you didn't. And by the way, everyone listening, hug your cat a little closer right now, okay?
And let me hug them.
And Darren as well. Keyes told investigators, quote, it ran around and around the tree and then like crashed into the tree. I mean, I actually kind of laughed a little, but then I looked over and the kid who was about my age was throwing up. Like he was really traumatized, I guess you could say, end quote. So I guess he's sort of laughing about how this all went down. He then said, quote, that was pretty much the last time anybody went into the woods with me. I learned my lesson, end quote.
Okay, so he at least understands some social cues.
Apparently.
Right?
As a teenager, he broke into people's homes and stole their firearms. He began lighting fires in the woods. Keyes started to reject the Christian faith, which his father had a problem with. He also became interested in Satanism. Okay, this is tracking, by the way. According to the Anchorage Daily News, around this time, Keyes told investigators he decided he could get away with raping or killing someone. He also had fantasies about murdering a young woman in a satanic ritual. In 1997, when Keyes was a teenager, the family moved to Mopin, Oregon, where he, his brothers, and his dad built a house. By the way, I guarantee somebody from Mopin, Oregon is listening. listening and will let us know 10,000 times that I said it wrong. Yeah. But that's okay.
But I do like the idea of saying Mopin,
Oregon. I believe it's Mopin.
Mopin. I thought it might have been French, yeah. Well, anyway, Keys committed his first crime that summer.
Of course, Matt would say that.
This isn't funny material, you guys. Keys committed his first crime that summer at the nearby... Oh, these words. Deschutes River. If you're from Oregon, let me know. He claimed...
I feel like the S is silent, so I think it's
Deschutes.
Yes.
He claimed he kidnapped a teenage girl who was inner tubing on the river. He said he then took her to a campground bathroom where he bound her with ropes and raped her. Very horrible details here. He told authorities he planned on strangling her, according to the Anchorage Daily News, and dumping her body in the toilet pit, and had even bought knives for the satanic ritual. But Keys told investigators that he let her go because he was, quote, too timid and, quote, wasn't violent enough, end quote. He also told investigators, quote, she kept saying she wasn't going to tell anybody. She was pretty smart. It worked. Things never got really violent like they could have if she had been fighting me, end quote. The unidentified victim never reported the crime, and no one has come forward since.
That is so interesting to me that no one ever came forward, and that could, I mean, I don't want to give a conjecture of what could be, but she was probably just so fucking terrified.
Well, yeah,
but it does sort of make you wonder, you know, in a horrible situation like this, like, how do you know if you should fight back or not? Is fighting back making it worse, or do you kind of hope that by not fighting back, you can resist them in some sort of way? And it was just like the fact that they never came forward. Even now, they never came forward, and who knows what happened to her? But like horrible
stuff. If she's still alive, but.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
that,
right.
But that is such a good point, Darren. Take a drink.
I
feel like I would have to fight no matter what.
Me too.
And just die.
It's a fight or flight. It does seem like it would be a natural instinct, but this saved her. Well, we don't know what happened to her later. But this potentially saved her life with this guy. It's very interesting. It's very interesting. Listeners, let us know what you think. This was the first I've ever heard of something like this happening where eventually she never reported it. It's one thing getting out and then reporting it.
The interesting thing is if this were later in his quote-unquote career, he would have killed her.
A year later, this girl might have been dead no matter what.
This was his warm-up.
Right.
Totally.
Well, when Keys was 20, he earned his high school equivalency degree and joined the Army. He really is an enigma, and just as we go more about this, like, this is really going to unfold. Over the following 2 years, he was stationed in Washington State, Texas, and Egypt. So he had a little bit of a different geography over the years. Though Keys made friends in the Army, fellow soldier Sean McGuire said he had a dark side. He explained that whenever Keys was annoyed or offended by his comments, Keys would... quote, knit his brow, lower his voice, and say, I want to kill you, McGuire. That was me.
By the way, Matt has to do that, too. So put it in.
Yeah, do
the
it. I want to kill you, McGuire.
I want to kill you, McGuire.
It's weird creepy. That he did it in his own accent when we put a voice changer down there, but that's fine.
That's okay. We'll keep him around.
Just as an aside, this last Sunday, 60 Minutes did a whole thing on the Golden State Killer and genealogy to find killers. And I'm listening in, and they play that voicemail of the East Area Rapist, and I was by myself in my apartment. I freaked out all over again.
What was it?
I want to kill you,
bitch. Wasn't it like bitch?
They didn't do bitch on 60 Minutes, but yeah.
You can do that on this show.
I hope.
On our show,
Keys also admitted that he drank heavily and patronized sex workers. During his time in the Army, Keys said he decided he would act out his killing fantasies. He told investigators, quote, I guess you could say I came to terms with myself and the reasons I wanted to do it. While stationed at Fort Lewis, south of Seattle, Washington, Keys began a relationship with a woman who was a member of the Macaw Indian tribe. She later gave birth to his daughter, reported by the Anchorage Daily News. In 2001, Keys was honorably discharged from the Army, and he moved on to the Macaw Reservation in Niobe, Washington. There, Keys worked for the tribal authority in the Parks and Recreation Department. One of Keys' co-workers told Oxygen's Method of a Serial Killer, quote, he would come into work and brag about his daughter. He was a loving dad, a doting father, end quote. So obviously you guys are thinking he's living two different lives, which is pretty much accurate.
Yeah.
He and Keys worked various jobs together around Niobe, and he said Keys was a motivated and meticulous worker. Though Keys seemed to be a caring and responsible father who provided for his daughter, he was skilled at leading a double life. If you're going to be a successful, quote-unquote, serial killer, probably meaning like you're killing and not getting caught at a fairly good pace, you have to be meticulous.
Yeah,
that
definitely
has to be that just has to be in your personality, right?
Well, like especially the most successful ones like that we've covered. I think of Golden State Killer, who was very meticulous and
everything.
Everyone has kind of described him as that type of a person.
Well, this guy especially all the details.
Yeah, I just have to say that is a really good point, John.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I still maintain that Bundy, who was supposed to be a genius or whatever, he seemed messy. Like he said, was on the beach.
Yeah, that's true.
Picked up two different girls on the beach with his cast and said, "My name's Ted."
He was messier, but at the same time, it did take him a while to get caught. And he killed.
You're right.
Yeah. I hate to say killed successfully, but he killed multiple women successfully without being caught.
Yeah.
He's hinted to investigators that he committed his first murder soon after moving to the reservation house. Nia Bay is a boring town, he's quoted as saying. Uh-huh. He refused to identify the first victim or disclose the location of their remains. Over the next 6 years in Washington, Keyes said he killed four more people. He said that he had studied the methods of fellow serial killer Ted Bundy, whom he admired, but called BTK killer Dennis Rader a wimp. We've covered BTK here on the show.
Yep.
For professing remorse for his killings after he was caught. I'm curious to think what Keyes would think of Ed Kemper.
I was just thinking that
we
too.
Talked about last week when I was, you know, attempting empathy at the situation, but I just felt that it was interesting that he confessed to everything and took himself to jail and didn't want a plea deal.
Attempting Empathy, a memoir by Darren Carr.
That's actually really good.
Yeah. Well, also, are these athletes? Like, they're comparing themselves to, like, I admire, you know.
But I think so, right? I mean, it is like, it is their sport.
Yeah,
it is their profession. You know what I mean?
And I feel like over the years now, covering this stuff on Oxygen and on the podcast, I do hear, you know, some of these murderers kind of comparing and contrasting each other's achievements. And it's like so sick.
Well, you know, Ted Bundy kind of had the exact same type of victim, brown hair, part down the middle. Keyes actually didn't really have a certain type of victim. He murdered both men and women of various ages. But after the birth of his daughter, Keyes said children became off limits.
Oh,
what a good dad.
Oh, yeah. Father of the year.
Father of the year. An FBI agent told Method of a serial killer that Keyes' second and third victims were a couple, quote, that he murdered and buried. We understood that he killed the female first and the male. The male was actually killed by a shovel strike, end quote. Still, he gave no identifying details. Keyes told the FBI used his boat to dispose of his fourth and fifth victims' bodies. He said at least one of the bodies was dumped in Crescent Lake in Washington, telling investigators that he, quote, used anchors to submerge the body, which would make sense. That's fill them with rocks. You see that all the time on like TV shows.
Well, especially I was thinking of the Lacey Peterson. Wasn't there the whole thing with the whole anchors
with
that
the anchor
made?
Thing that he the homemade anchors.
Good point, John.
Thank you.
Actually, Keyes did not disclose the identities of his victims, so he's playing ball just enough, but not really giving any certain details. Around this time, Keyes and his girlfriend broke up, and he started dating a new woman. In March of 2007, she, Keyes, and his daughter moved to Anchorage, Alaska. Have any of you guys been there?
No.
I have. And it's gorgeous.
Mm.
There, Keyes settled into family life once again and started working as a handyman and contractor. He eventually started his own business, Keyes Construction. And a man who hired Keyes told the Anchorage Daily News that he was, quote, reliable, unfailingly polite, and responsive. You called, he called you back. I completely trusted him with his work. If he gave me a bill, I always paid. No questions asked. This is the double life. The doting father, the handyman, the good Samaritan, you know, often on this podcast we talk about them. Like, he murdered a victim and then the next day he woke up and changed his neighbor's tire and mowed his elderly neighbor's lawn. Like, this is that double life that's really coming out here.
Well, I'm trying to figure out, so that he's, Matt, help me understand this. So he's admitting to these murders and they're not arresting him?
He has been arrested because at the end of his career, which led to his arrest, was in the beginning, there's like an 18-year-old barista in a coffee shop. So that happened because he brazenly goes in and kidnaps and kills her. He ends up getting caught for that.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
And then he starts confessing to all of his crimes, but nobody knows if he's really confessing to all of his crimes or just some of his crimes, and he's only giving some details, but not all details, but he's giving enough details so where the
police
FBI
believe him,
knows
I that see.
He has definitely killed quite a few people.
So why aren't they arresting him then? Why is he moving to Anchorage, Alaska with his daughter?
No.
This is after he gets caught. He's not caught yet.
I see what's happening.
We aren't that,
we're jumping a little bit in the script.
No,
sweetie. I know. I'm just trying to make sure.
At the end.
I see what you're saying. Okay, so I just want to make sure the listeners are following along
as well.
Yeah,
of course.
So that makes
sense.
All right. So anyway, during his time off from work, Keyes made multiple cross-country trips to stake out potential victims. To fund his trips, Keyes told investigators he robbed multiple banks, and the FBI was able to confirm two of those robberies. Keyes told the FBI he targeted total strangers to avoid getting caught, traveling thousands of miles to stalk his victims and learn their habits before killing them.
I actually think that's what makes him such an enigma, but also a fairly good serial killer, is because it wasn't just in California in this one area. I mean, you know, we talked about him being stationed before in Washington, Texas, and Egypt. It's hard to catch someone when you're flying one way, renting a car, driving over here. Like, it's very confusing.
Sporadic.
It's very sporadic, and it's probably led to his success in this.
That is absolutely true. And he also transported people from one state to another. And then he buried his weapons years before. I mean,
interesting. He said he left Anchorage under the guise of visiting distant friends and family members, and no one suspected he was going on these multi-state killing sprees. Thanks. Got it out. Keyes told investigators that he stashed, quote, murder kits near future crime scenes all across the country.
Imagine finding one of those.
Oh, my God. I mean, what would... Oh, never mind. This answers my question. These kits contained weapons and supplies to dispose of victims' bodies, including duct tape, shovels, guns, rope, Drano, and lye. He would later tell investigators his preferred murder method was strangulation so he could watch his victims suffer. That might be one of the most disturbing lines we've ever read on this show. I don't know. That's just really, that's one that haunts me.
Well, yeah, because I think when this is just a juxtaposition from last week with Kemper, he would shoot the victims, except when it came to his mother and her friend, who he strangled the friend to watch her die and see her suffer, and then did horrible things to his mother's body. But everyone else, it was as kind of an easy killing as possible, at least suffering killing as possible with a gun. So
to enjoy the suffering is just so disturbing.
Yeah, exactly.
To dispose of his victims' remains, Keyes told investigators, quote, Drano was an idea I had in case they were found right away. I didn't want there to be any DNA on the outside of the bodies. The other thought I had that it would start the decomposition and it would break them down a little bit faster, end quote. It's always tough reading quotes from serial killers. Just
decomposition.
So you know. Yeah, decomposition. What did I say?
Decompensation, but I don't know.
I need to take a nap.
I'm drunk. You're hyped up on sugar.
I'm definitely not drunk, though. Okay. At the time of his arrest, Keyes said he had multiple caches buried across the country. Oh, of his kits, I guess that's what that is. A former FBI agent told Method of a serial killer, quote, Israel Keyes was one of the most meticulous serial killers that I've ever come across or even heard of. And one of the reasons is these kill kits are caches of gears that he had stashed away all around the country.
Yeah, right. Because he's not traveling with him, he gets caught in a car or whatever he's doing, he's got nothing on him. You know what I mean? Like,
that's true, he
has patience, which I think a lot of people don't, and that's how easily they get caught because they're so rushing for that kill. He's meticulous.
The caches would sometimes sit for years before Keyes committed a murder, proving he had an unmatched level of patience compared to other serial killers.
Exactly,
Darren.
Right.
The FBI determined he took as many as 35 trips between October 2004 and his capture in March 2012, and they believe he claimed multiple victims during this time. If you think about it, 4 to 2012 is quite a long time. I mean, of course, it's not Golden State Killer time, but that's a significant time to just be free, in my opinion. You know what I mean? I don't
100%.
I just feel like 2012 wasn't even that long ago.
No, it wasn't. It definitely wasn't.
From now. Among the crimes law enforcement believes Keyes may be connected to is the disappearance of 49-year-old Deborah Feldman, who was last seen at her home in Hackensack, New Jersey.
Right by me.
On April 8th, 2009. Keyes told investigators he abducted a woman on the East Coast on April 9th, 2009 and transported her to upstate New York, where he murdered and buried her. During a forensic search of his computer, investigators found the name Deborah Feldman in Keyes' search history. Well, that kind of says a lot,
that
right?
That seems odd, you know, and he would stalk them for years sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. An FBI agent told CNN that when Keyes was shown a picture of Feldman, he paused and said, quote, I'm not ready to talk about that one, end quote. I just think it's interesting that he's calling so much of the shots here. I mean, of course, he's the one that has all the information.
But it's a control thing.
Yeah.
Was it because that murder was was particularly brutal.
Yeah. We'll never know. Or was it like just that it was super recent or... Who knows?
Yeah.
You know, who knows?
When they confronted Keys about finding her name on his computer, he said, quote, "Well, put it this way. There's a lot of names on that computer. I'm not going to talk about what's on the computer," end quote. Okay. Her body has never been recovered. In 2010, Keys flew from Anchorage to Sacramento, then...
Hello,
Sacramento yet again.
Sacktown.
Then rented a car in Auburn. He drove 280 miles in 3 days. Authorities believe he may have been involved in criminal activity.
280 miles in 3 days. I mean, you're driving for like an hour a day.
Yeah, that's
like
not too much.
That bad. Yeah, like that doesn't take that long.
In 2011, Keys was staking out a park in Anchorage, Alaska. He told investigators he wanted to shoot a couple sitting in a car, but a police officer drove into the parking lot. He then decided he wanted to shoot the police officer, but then another police officer drove into the parking lot.
That's pretty lucky, you know. I mean, that he wasn't going to, that he didn't get to go
carry
out
through.
And carry through, you know, much like that girl who he wasn't ready to kill her. He was used too timid, so she kind of got away. Though Keys initially targeted victims who wouldn't be missed, he later began murdering more high profile people. In early June of 2011, Keys flew from Alaska to Chicago, then rented a car and drove to Essex, Vermont to look for victims. He's just so like
everywhere.
He's everywhere.
And
actually smart.
Yeah.
It's smart in that. The mind of a serial killer, that's a smart thing to do.
Yeah.
He had previously buried a murder kit nearby during a visit in the area in 2009, and he later told investigators he was looking for a house with an attached garage, no cars in the driveway, with no children and no dogs. He has a heart.
Mm.
Finally, after several days, he set his sights on 50-year-old Bill Currier and his wife, 55-year-old Lorraine. On the night of June 8th, 2011, Keyes said he cut the Currier's phone lines before breaking into their home. Absolutely fucking terrifying. Rushing into their bedroom and restraining them with zip ties.
This gave me a Michael Myers vibe, because remember in the original Halloween, he cut the phone line to
totally
the house?
And in Scream and anything.
Oh yeah.
Keys laughed and told investigators they were in complete shock, saying, quote, "People never expect this stuff to happen to them," end quote. He then loaded them into their own car and drove them to a farmhouse he had previously scouted out where he planned to kill them. Keys told investigators, quote, "Bill's like, just let us go. I know you're in too deep, but you can still walk away." I just kind of laughed at him. In my head, I was like, you don't even know how much planning I've put into this, end quote. Which is true, because he's probably spent years and years and years stalking these people and finding the right garage and the no kids and the no dogs. Like,
yeah.
I mean, they don't know that, but he's going through with it.
Yeah,
he seems committed to his craft.
I mean, I feel like the lottery was just like $1.7 billion or something like that, right? These people have won the opposite. You know, the anti-lottery.
Right. Yeah,
100%. But that's why people don't think it's going to happen to them.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
And the lottery is, it could happen to you or whatever. You know, that's exactly what it is. So at the farmhouse, Lorraine, who Keys described as feisty, tried to make a run for it, but he tackled her and brought her back inside.
Ugh.
When Bill attempted to break free and rescue his wife, Keys hit him in the head with a shovel and shot him.
Mm.
He then sexually assaulted Lorraine before strangling her. Keys poured Drano on their bodies before putting them in garbage bags and covering them with debris. While in custody, Keys told the FBI where they could locate the farmhouse, but unfortunately it had been demolished in the months following the murder. The debris had been sent to the largest landfill in Vermont, which investigators searched for 12 weeks.
Wow.
Over 10,000 tons of trash was picked through, but they were unable to locate the Currier's remains. He's disposed of two guns he used during the crime in a reservoir in Parrishville, New York, where he was eventually recovered by an FBI dive team. So there's hope there.
Yeah.
The FBI was also able to locate Keyes' murder kit at a nearby location. Keys then returns to Alaska, where he committed a brazen crime that actually led to his capture. On February 1st, 2012, he kidnapped 18-year-old barista Samantha Koenig from the Common Grounds Espresso in Anchorage at gunpoint, according to ABC News. Matt was alluding to this earlier. He had gone into the coffee shop right before it was about to close wearing a ski mask and asked for the money out of the register. Samantha complied and he tied her hands, according to the FBI release. He then walked her out of the coffee shop at gunpoint. She tried to run, but he tackled her and pointed the gun at her body and told her not to do anything that would make him kill her.
I have to say, there is footage of this, surveillance footage that
right.
you can watch online, and it's pretty...
It's horrible.
Freaky.
He then walked her, he bound Samantha in his trunk and told her he was going to hold her for ransom and that she would be returned to her family without being harmed if she complied.
I just want to mention it's truck, not trunk, only because we want to get the details
sorry.
Right. No, that's okay.
put her in his truck. That's
yes,
right.
Truck, yeah.
She believed his intentions and said her family didn't have that much money and he probably wouldn't get much ransom. But he said the public would probably help raise money for the family. Then Keyes went back to the coffee stand to retrieve her cell phone and ATM card. He said he needed her phone for his ransom plans. This is the first time ever hearing about any sort of ransom. So it's pretty obviously he was going through some sort of break here because that seems very outlier to his normal killings. Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh.
Hop on, Megan.
So he's kidnapping her from a public place, right? From her coffee house.
Right.
And he's walking her outside to his truck. She's got so much opportunity to, like, scream and draw attention to herself. I'm sure he's doing whatever he can to keep her quiet.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
Right?
He has a gun, right?
So if he's saying, I have a gun, I'm not going to hurt you, I just want to hold you ransom, it's making her feel safe.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
Right. So it's keeping her quiet and it's keeping her from drawing attention.
Mm. Totally.
That's interesting, yeah.
But I'm just saying this is the first I've ever heard about him doing it like this. Like,
yeah.
Normally, you know, he'd go rob banks or whatever on his own.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is just, this seems like a gross misstep. Yeah, gross misstep. So Keyes took her to a shed on his property. He texted Samantha's boyfriend and boss that she was leaving town for the weekend. And then Keyes sexually assaulted Samantha and strangled her to death. Mm. He said he blasted, this is crazy.
Yeah.
He blasted loud music so his girlfriend and daughter wouldn't hear her screams.
That is disturbing, and it also reminds me of American Psycho.
I was going to say.
That's exactly right. Like, but his...
it's unfathomable that human beings can do something like this. It's what chemistry is going on in your
Collins,
head?
Right,
right, yeah. Exactly. But get this next detail. So the morning after the murder, Keyes rolled Samantha's body up and stuck her inside a box in the shed. He then left with his daughter and girlfriend in New Orleans to board a pre-planned two-week cruise.
Oh, my God.
At this point, police reviewed surveillance footage from the Common Grounds espresso shop that captured Samantha's abduction. They also found additional footage of the car used in her kidnapping, a white Chevy pickup, but investigators wouldn't uncover any new leads until Keyes returned from his trip.
Wow. Well, let's talk about his final run, I guess you could say. Once Keyes made it back to Alaska, he said Samantha's body had frozen because of the low temperatures. He then thawed her remains and applied makeup to her face so she could appear more lifelike. Very disturbing. According to Method of a Serial Killer, he also braided her hair the same way he, quote, braided his daughter's hair. Keyes took a Polaroid.
That's a big detail.
Yeah?
Because I think, one, that's his two lives merging.
Oh, right, yeah.
And that seems to be like some psychotic break because he's so good at separating it.
Oh,
and that I think that led to his ultimate downfall.
Well, he took a Polaroid of Samantha alongside an Anchorage Daily News from February 13th, 2012. He made a photocopy of the Polaroid and wrote out a ransom note demanding $30,000 be placed in her account. Again, he used Samantha's phone to text her boyfriend and that he would find the note in a local park.
Right.
This is very like, you know, like almost movie-esque in a sense.
100%.
In the way he's doing this. When police found the photo, her family confirmed it was Samantha, but said she never wore her hair in a braid.
See?
Yeah, see? Still, they held on to hope that she was alive. After sending the ransom note, Keyes dismembered her body and dumped it in the deepest area of Matanuska Lake near Palmer, Alaska. He later told the FBI he cut a hole in the frozen lake under the guise of ice fishing. The assistant U.S. attorney assigned to Keyes' case told Method of a Serial Killer, quote, "So I asked him, did you catch any fish? And he said, yeah, I caught a fish. And I go, what'd you do with them? And he goes, I took them home and ate them. So that really kind of turned my stomach," end quote. I don't know if there's any kind of like hyperbole here or what's happening.
I don't know.
Anyway, at least he had some fish. Police then worked with Samantha's family to deposit money into the account from her reward fund. With the money in place, Keyes hit the road for one last time. He drove through the Southwest and made multiple withdrawals from Samantha's account along the way, allowing for police to track his movements. And I feel like that's such a rookie mistake.
Exactly.
With all this planning, you obviously should know at this point they're going to track her ATM card.
Exactly.
He's losing it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. This is the threat of his lives merging. Like, he's losing it now.
Every time money was withdrawn, Keyes concealed his face with a mask, so at least he knows, like, they're on to him, but why even do it? But in the ATM surveillance footage, detectives were able to figure out what car he was driving, a white Ford Focus. In March 2012, he reached out to his estranged family and attended his sister's wedding in Wells, Texas.
Wow.
While the reunion seemed to go well at first, Keyes later made a scene at the reception. An FBI agent told Method of a Serial Killer that he was, quote, confronted with the fact that he's not living what his family deems to be a Christian life. life, and he ranted about how he didn't believe in God.
I feel like that's not going to go well like a fundamentalist family.
And not at a wedding, of all things.
Sure.
Do you think he started to feel like he was just invincible? Like,
definitely.
He'd been killing for a long time.
Yeah, I feel like he got very confident and cocky.
Was so careful and would spend years planning things, and right. Now he's just kidnapping someone, demanding ransom, using their debit card.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Not leading a Christian life.
And to his credit, they haven't caught him. You know what I mean? Like, he's taken things out of ATMs.
100%. He feels exactly to Matt's point. He feels like he's invincible. He's cocky about it now.
I'm surprised that he was able to withdraw that much money over time, because it's like, most of the time, you can probably track where this person is. You know what I mean?
I think that they were probably tracking him and just wanted to see where he was going to go, or
to maybe, like, then catch him.
Yeah.
Oh, so the authorities kept it open.
That's
what
Darren's
saying. Because I just went to Mexico City, and my debit card was cut off in one day.
Oh, my God.
After I used it one time.
Yeah. Did you have to call and, like, have them do it?
I tried.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Okay.
Go on.
Okay.
You're supposed to report that to the credit card companies as soon as you travel.
Well, a reporter told Method of a serial killer that Keyes also said something along the lines of, quote, "You'll know later. You have no idea what I did," end quote. It appeared that Keyes was finally losing control. Around this time, he also set fire to a home in Aledo, Texas, and robbed another bank a few towns away. It's almost crazy. Like, one of these things happening and getting away with it is kind of crazy. To do so many things and still not get caught is just so mind-boggling.
Especially a robbery.
Yeah, robbery especially.
That seems crazy.
Though Keyes never confirmed it, the FBI believes he committed another murder in Texas or a surrounding state. And on March 13th, 2012, Keyes was apprehended in the parking lot of a Cotton Patch Cafe in Lufkin, Texas. A highway patrol corporal noticed that white Ford Focus and pulled Keyes over after he made a traffic infraction.
Smart.
Once the corporal saw his Alaska driver's license, he immediately searched the vehicle. Inside the car, police found a gun as well as Samantha's cell phone and debit card. They arrested Keyes for illegally using Samantha's debit card and extradited him to Alaska, where police were able to identify his white Chevy pickup from the surveillance footage.
Wow.
So
after the FBI and prosecution presented Keyes with all the evidence against him, he agreed to a full confession about Samantha's disappearance. But he had a few demands in exchange. He laughed and told investigators, quote, "I can give you the rest of the story, like, you know, everything that happened, if I get a cigar or a strawberry Fanta."
Or, yes.
That was mine.
Did you hear the news recently where a guy, like, told people where a body was if he could get an Xbox in prison? And they gave it to him?
Oh, yeah, I heard that. Well, I mean,
check it out, oxygen.com.
Well, he also requested, get this, an Americano and a peanut butter Snickers bar.
I relate to that, at the very least.
You gotta know your snacks.
Yes, exactly.
According to Method of a Serial Killer, Keyes' confession about Samantha's abduction is so, quote, so graphic and shocking that the FBI has never released the full tapes,
oh my God,
end quote. The assistant U.S. attorney assigned to Keyes' case told Method of a Serial Killer, quote, "I think in his words he said, you got your monster." Mm. After another Americano and Snickers bar. I mean, what is with this guy?
By the way, I'm never going to be ordering these two things together ever again.
Never going to order Americano?
Not with a Snickers bar.
Okay, that's fair.
I don't want the association.
That's fair, yeah.
Hopefully you understand.
Keyes disclosed the location of Samantha's remains, so he just needed two Snickers bars.
Yeah.
The day after Keyes' confession, the FBI dispatched the cold water dive team to Matanuska Lake, where they found Samantha's body. Mm. She was the only one found out of Keyes' 11 likely victims. A former FBI agent told Method of a Serial Killer, quote, "Keyes' demeanor is calm. It's matter of fact, and he certainly thought he was the smartest guy in the room. So it's at this point we start realizing that we might be dealing with someone who's done this before," end quote. Near the end of his confession, Keyes said, quote, "There is no one who knows me or has ever known me who knows anything about me, really. They're going to tell you something that does not line up with anything I tell you because I'm two different people, basically."
And I just really relate to that quote.
You do relate to that. Are you drinking, like, grape Fanta at home?
Exactly.
Okay. Yes. So this is your serial killer?
Well, it's just like, you don't know me. You don't know my life.
You don't know me.
I say that out loud to many people.
When asked how long he'd been two different people, Keyes replied, "A long time. 14 years. So that seems pretty...
That's kind of what I was getting at with the 2004 to 2012 thing. I'm like, it's just so long.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Even though Keyes hinted at other crimes, he held back from giving exact details about the other murders. Keyes said he was worried about the effect his confessions would have on his daughter. So according to the Anchorage Daily News. And he said, quote, "I want her to have a chance to grow up and not have all of this hanging over her head," end quote, which is sort of fascinating to me because it almost seems like one side of him is pure, unadulterated evil.
Yeah.
And then the other side of it is this empathetic family man, father, who cares about the legacy that he's going to leave for his daughter. Not enough to stop doing it.
He wanted both.
He wanted both, but it's like, it's so weird. Like that. Like the one side can't comprehend the other.
Yeah,
you know
totally.
What I mean? Like, he doesn't even know who the fuck he is.
Well, and it makes you wonder what his motives are. It's like, why are you doing this? If you care so much about your daughter's happiness, why isn't
that circuit kicking in?
Right,
that's exactly right. He also didn't want his daughter to one day, quote, "type my name into a computer and have it pop up." Well, let me tell you.
Or type it into the podcast.
This daughter typed in your name, Israel, and... Yeah.
Martinez and murder came up.
It's not looking good. Keyes told investigators he would only give out more information if they set an execution date for him and give him anonymity. He said, "I want this whole thing wrapped up and over with." Oh, that's nice. Oh. Do you want this whole thing fucking wrapped up over with? Even though Alaska abolished the death penalty in 1957, thank God, investigators said they would try to meet his demands. They also agreed to keep Keyes' name out of the media, and he gave the FBI all the details surrounding the Currier murders in Vermont. But when Keyes' name was leaked to the local media, investigators hit a roadblock. Once it's out, it's out.
Yeah.
The FBI informed Keyes of the news coverage, and he told them, quote, I'm getting a little bit ticked off. I told you from the get-go before I told you where the freaking bodies were left. I told you that I didn't want the locals involved, and the first thing you do is make a big scene.
Which isn't really their fault. It sounds like if it was leaked...
And you know what? Like, should this guy get his fucking, does this guy like get his last word on what he wants? Like, no.
And for someone who has been so smart about killing, he's actually pretty fucking dumb.
He's so fucking dumb.
He thinks his name is never going to come out.
Right.
What the fuck?
That makes no sense.
Well, investigators work to rebuild the serial killer's trust, which, you know, they want to be able to solve the other murders.
Right.
You know what I mean? So there's still that relationship they have to establish. Well, you know what I mean? They're not going to say, fuck you. They're going to be like, no, I want those details.
Well, and also not just for the victim themselves, but for all the family members that are associated with every one of these people.
That's
the
least that could have happened.
Yeah.
You know, getting justice.
Right.
So, but Key said he felt frustrated because he was losing control of the situation. Key said, quote, "The more stuff my name is attached to, the more likely it is that somebody's going to try to do some kind of stupid true crime bullshit like this podcast."
He was right about that.
He was correct.
So though Key said he had killed, quote, less than a dozen people, he refused to provide any identifying details about his victims during the 40 hours worth of interviews. Key said, quote, "The things I've done, I don't feel bad about them. I did them for myself. It's better for me to keep them to myself. They're mine," end quote. Oh, I hate the "they're mine"
line. Oh, it's
line.
So eerie.
On November 30th, 2012, the FBI got Keyes to agree to help them find some of his hidden murder kits by using Google Maps and a remote video drone.
Google it.
Which is so weird. This is the first time I think we've ever... Google it. That we've ever talked about... Drones.
Yeah.
Google, yeah. But drones being used...
No, modern day technology has really helped for this.
I mean, drones are, you know, let's not get into like... you know, weapons of war, but a regular commercial drone can really do a lot of things that like they couldn't
do. They're fantastic.
In terms, when it comes to like true crime and investigations. But on the night of December 1st, 2012, Keyes took full control of his narrative. He committed suicide with a piece of a razor he had hidden in a pencil and used bedding material to strangle himself.
How do you hide a razor in a pencil?
Who knows? I don't even know.
Do you know?
I don't ever want to
know. Sure, you can. How? You can get stuff in prison.
But like in a pencil?
I mean, you could just kind of like shave down like the inside of a pencil, like maybe even put the eraser on top of it.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I'm thinking like a little razor, not like a chic razor.
I was thinking a razor blade. That's what I was thinking of.
Thank you very much.
Chic is not sponsoring this podcast.
No, they're not. And they never will now.
No, they won't.
Despite being previously held in a suicide cell, his suicide went undetected until the following morning. A former FBI agent told Method of a serial killer, quote, "He was going to be looked at as a monster. Now, I don't think he minded being looked at as a monster, but ultimately, because he was captured, he was going to be looked at as a failure, and that's what I think he didn't want," end quote. Yeah, I feel like a lot of times we hear about these suicides in
100%.
Prisons, it's so that they can control their own narrative and so that they can't be labeled
as
anything.
And they don't have to suffer being in prison for the crimes that they committed, like all the people that he fucking murdered.
Yeah. Keys left a blood-smeared suicide note, which ABC News described as, quote, a creepy ode to murder.
I'm actually surprised you didn't make me read this line, because I was reading this script and I was like, John's going to give me this creepy-ass fucking poem to read, because I like would say it in like a really weird whisper. So you have to make it super creepy as if it's not creepy enough.
I almost wonder if Matt should read this line, but I don't, but just so everyone knows, Darren's referencing what segments we are referring to as we read the research out, and I typically, just so you know, I'm not really, it's very arbitrary.
No, I know. It's just like one other. But yeah, I was like, once he reads it, he's going to make me do
it. Well, I'll read it and then maybe you can read it back. One line reads, okay, quote, okay, talk is over. Words are placid and weak. Back it with action or it all comes off cheap. Oh my God, it's a poem.
It's a poem.
Watch close while I work now. Feel the electric shock of my touch. Open your trembling flower or your petals I'll crush. End quote.
I just thought with the flowers and the petals, right, with the allusion to the vagina, you wouldn't want me to.
I can handle that. Thank you very much for looking out for me in that way.
How fucking awful is that?
I think, though, what we need to do is have Matt read this as the very end of the episode and then we just like fade to black, Megan. Maybe we can get him to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
it's so creepy.
It's
it really is creepy.
Like, it's actually...
Someone calls it serial killer poetry.
Well, can I say this?
It is that. It is that.
I will say this. As a former creative writer who has published works, thank you very much, it's not a bad poem in the sense
of
like...
No, I know. I know. The metaphor of it. Then you know it was written by a serial killer. You're like,
and then you're like, okay.
Before we move on,
yes.
If we're going to fade to black, sure, we have to think...
Yeah, no,
we're not there yet, Matt. We're not there.
We're gonna fade to black eventually, so we got to do it now.
Yeah, but we're not finished with the podcast. When we're finished, we'll do the thanks. We have two more lines left.
I thought we were fading to black,
but we're not done. We'll fade to black when we're done.
Are we in our first fight?
I mean, like we literally have like
a half fight?
John, I know that you agree with me on this. Well, we literally have two other details to say, and he's fading to black.
Matt, you're saying to say thank you to the writers?
I'm saying before we...
Yeah, we'll get to that.
When we're done, we will.
Guys.
When we're done, we're going to be fading to black.
This
so
is the 99th... don't understand.
Guys, just so everyone knows, here's what's happening.
For the next five minutes. What's going on here?
Here, I'll tell you.
We're going to finish the podcast, then we can thank people.
Megan's explaining.
Megan's agreeing.
We have listener shout outs. We have everything. Like, this is our 99th episode.
I thought we were fading to black. That means there's no more after that.
I suggested when we're finished.
Oh my God.
This is our first giant fight.
It's like you haven't been here.
I can't believe I got you pregnant.
What's happening?
Next time when we're doing a murder, just cut it after a page. Because apparently it doesn't matter finish a podcast.
No.
Let's just do everything that we've been doing for 99 episodes.
It's a block. We can't think.
He's punching his microphone.
Matt, I'm fading you to black.
Like, Jesus Christ. Finish the fucking show, John.
He just punched the microphone out of his face, so you guys know.
Very upset.
Yes, very upset. Matt, here, let me just recap. We have two little more details here. We're going to do listener shout-outs where we'll thank the researchers.
Oh, so we're not fading to black then?
And then you'll say your thing.
Yeah. When have we fade to black at the end? I don't understand what he's thinking.
The hashtag fade to black. It's like the whole thing now on the show.
Jesus Christ.
Matt, don't worry. You will have your chance in the sun, my friend. We'll get there. We'll cue you when it's time.
We'll cue you.
Right. Everyone's ganging up on me.
I'm not. I'm with you, Matt.
John, you know me and Megan are right. So I don't even need to prove this.
I'm on everyone's team because we are a family in the studio, guys.
Not right now. We're getting a divorce. Okay. Baby Tersh is going to grow up in a broken home.
Oh, my God.
All because this motherfucker wants to fade to black in the middle of a goddamn show.
I'm still confused what he was asking. Anyway,
I need another drink. Keep going.
Following Keyes' death, the FBI went public with information about his possible connection to multiple unsolved murders. To date, Keyes' other alleged murders and crimes have yet to be confirmed.
Did it take so long to say those details?
That's the end of that segment, Matt, and now we're going to get into listener shout-outs.
I thought I was going to read it next, and then we're fading to black.
Oh, at the end of the episode.
Right, that's the con... Guys, one second, let me get it.
But why would we do... then the point is gone.
No, what we're going to do
What's the point of having an outline?
At the end of the episode, you're going to read the poetry, almost like a cold ending, to the show.
Once we thank everyone.
The tension is broken. There's no point. I
don't think so.
To do it.
Then I'll
There's
do
no
it.
Point.
You know what, Matt? Why don't
tension,
you get off the fucking mic and give me another
the
goddamn
The tension will
drink.
Be recreated
yes,
with
ma'am.
Your creepy voice. That's the idea.
He
Megan,
said,
I,
ma'am,
I,
he's
I,
back in my good graces.
I'm just making sure we're all on the same page.
I mean, it's
guys,
like we haven't done this for 2 years.
I wonder if the fans are like, is this what happens whenever they get off of the microphone?
Yes.
Tersh is
Tersh is upset. Tersh is like, give me a strike.
She's
like,
galloping all through
we
your
need
belly.
To keep everything healthy.
The yeah. antler's
keep
about to crown. That's how upset
please.
I am. Sorry, John. But it's,
no, that's
it's,
disgusting,
we're
but
there.
It's fine. All right, Darren, before Matt has a hernia.
Well, Jesus Christ.
And loses his
This is why we don't
cool.
care when he has a heart attack.
Right?
His My heart.
His angina.
Anyway, so
Never
the murder.
Forget. Never
okay.
forget.
We wanted to yes. give a special shout out to our yes. friend at Mama2NJ. I hope that means you're from New Jersey, but I don't know. On Instagram, who has a birthday on October 30th, the day before Halloween. Happy birthday, and thanks for being such a great fan and listener. We really appreciate it. Happy birthday.
Yeah, this particular listener messages me from time to time. She's a very sweet person. Happy to give you a birthday shout out. So happy
Amen.
Birthday.
You know, you ever notice, like, I was in a bar last night and yeah. it was someone's birthday. And they're like, happy birthday. That's the yes. saddest song.
It really is. And I really think that we should all stop singing it. You know
it's
what I mean?
So depressing.
Don't sing, especially as an adult. Just let the kids
Unless
do it.
It's Matt's birthday.
Mary on Twitter says, Mary on Twitter says, all the true crime podcasts I've been listening to lately have made me wary of running by myself outside. And then she used some emojis
I
here.
Would be too, sweetie.
Well, I wrote her back and I said, just be very alert. Have your phone with you.
Right.
Have a weapon. I would say carry like a knife or, you know, like mace, pepper spray. I think that's really important.
Is pepper spray still illegal, though, in a lot of places?
Oh, I didn't know. I don't know.
Do you know that, right?
It is
right? It's not. You can't have it here, right? In New York City, you can't. No,
New York, probably not.
Isn't
yeah.
that amazing?
It is. I
isn't that just
that.
Amazing yeah. that they're just making things to protect yourself? It's just
And then you can't use them. Well, also shout out, Matt, to our Oxygen writers, Ben and Allie.
Wait, no, we have to really, let's make a fucking point of this. Put this everywhere, Megan.
Oh, boy.
Put this on a loop.
Oh, my God.
No, I mean, this is a big thank
no,
you.
No, this
just
is
saying.
A thank you. Yeah, Ben and Allie on the Oxygen.com team helped us produce this week's show.
So many details.
Ben
they really
Smith,
did such a good job.
Allie Vanderhayden.
Yes.
Oh, great last name.
Great people.
Love a Vanderhayden. Thank you so much, Allie and Ben.
Vandersloot.
I mean, let's just say you helped us out so much that Matt just wanted to just, and not
Be
even.
Done.
Be done with the podcast.
He wanted to fade to black 20 minutes
care.
Early.
Let's just thank everybody.
That's fine.
We are so appreciative. We are not appreciative of Matt.
There
thank you.
Go.
That's it.
The tension is broken. We're not doing this fade.
Matt,
you
here's
can't
the thing.
Go to listener shout outs
Guess what,
and
Matt?
Then everyone's attention is captivated. It doesn't work like that.
Listen,
pretty sure we don't have anybody's attention captivated after this show.
Go ahead, Darren.
Our voicemail's back up and running. Thank God, because I've been yelling at Johnny and Oxygen
yeah.
team for weeks. Call us and say hi. Leave a voicemail. It may be aired on a future episode. We promise to get to these voicemails, right,
yes.
Johnny? Because we love all your voices. We've been compiling them. We just kind of want to do a bunch at a time. So
well, yeah,
it took a little while. You mentioned it last week that we
yes.
we have an intern now
yep.
who's helping us.
Well,
with this.
I also didn't realize that our voicemail box could get full like that. So apologies. Everything is back up and running. You can call us at 212-664-2072. It's in the show notes of this episode as well. Now, Matt, here's what's going to happen, okay? Try to run with us here.
Just
and Megan, or,
say the fucking poem.
Can you give him the poem, Darren, on the piece of paper you have? And all we're going to do, Matt, is have you read it. And
At
then
the top, Matt.
We're signing off, but Matt, you're going to give us the creepy
Wait,
poem on the way out.
Megan, in our
okay.
show notes, can the show notes this week just be thank yous to Ben and Allie? There's nothing about the murder. In fact, the murder, it should be called episode 99, a thank you to
a
Ben
thank
and Allie. Because
to Ben and Allie.
Matt won't be satisfied until...
That's apparently what we needed.
We needed the entire time.
Okay, so listeners, thank you for listening.
Thank
now
you
we're going to hand
listening.
This over to Matt. Let's see if he doesn't fuck this up. Okay, here we go.
I was talking
here
about
we
dramatic
go.
Tension. You can't
Now
have,
is your chance to
you
set it
have,
up.
Oh, all right, all
yeah.
right, all right. All right.
Okay,
it.
Okay, well, one last time. Okay, bye, listeners.
Bye, listeners. Thank,
thank
you for listening.
Sorry for
okay.
listening.
Okay, talk is over. Words are placid and weak. Back with action, or it all comes off cheap. Watch close while I work now. Feel the electric shock of my touch. Open your trembling flower, or your petals I'll crush.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.